Hey, this is LGBTQ&A, where we get to know different members of the LGBTQ community. I'm Jeffrey Masters, and I'm here today with Shane Ortega. Shane is an activist and the first trans person to serve openly in the military. Stay tuned. Hey, Shane.
Hi.
Hi. How are ya?
I'm great.
Good. Welcome to our show.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a very humbling and a pleasure to be here.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice. I forget that it's only been a few months since the ban on trans people serving the military has been lifted.
Yeah, absolutely. So everything that's still like implementation and sort of those incongruencies are still being like sort of shined up, but it's still a kind of a roller coaster, as you could say.
Yeah, it's still a work in progress.
Yes.
Oh my, so like obviously like the ban's been lifted, but obviously like the fight is not over. Like, what are those inconsistencies you're talking about?
So the fight not being over is things like, so they just came out with the actual legal and medical language to lift the ban on the 1st of October.
Really?
Right. So I think everybody was really celebratory, which is amazing, and I'm really, really happy. But there's still a lot of things like navigating the health system, people getting on hormones, when do people transition?
Yeah.
Those things that are still being kind of smoothed out. Just like after the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, we were still kind of like, hey, what about equal opportunity protections?
You know? Yeah. I was fascinated to read that you transitioned while you were in the military, while the ban was in effect, and like with military like medical supervision.
Yes. So I like to say that, you know, I'll challenge, you know, the bull head on a little bit, which is a little crazy. We can say that.
So
I transitioned starting in 2010. I was actually taking hormones under the supervision of a military doctor in Virginia for a little while before. So that was all the way back in 2010. So I was on hormones for 6 years during my service.
Wow. So why were you not like removed if the ban was there?
Because I'm a sneaky little fox. it's because basically I took it upon myself to really challenge the military legal system. So I did as much research as I could about the military legal system, and there was only one requirement that really said, like, if you're, you know, gay or trans or anything like that, it was just admission. If you don't talk about it, you know, just like Don't Ask, Don't Tell, then no one really questions it, because it's a very like hyper masculine environment, and so masculinity is obviously really encouraged,
right?
And then just a general understanding of like the medical text at the time, basically it said, like, you know, as long as you don't say you're trans, you know, and you report this medication, everything's copacetic.
Really?
Crazy, right? Yeah. So operating in that sort of gray area.
Wow, that's incredible. So I was interested to read that you did 3 tours.
Yes.
Three combat tours.
Yeah. But I deployed 5 times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But half of those were like a Marine, and then you did the Marines and the Army?
Yes. So I was in the United States Marine Corps from 2005 until 2009, July.
Yeah.
And then I was in the United States Army from July 16th of 2009 until this past July, which is when I just got retired.
Oh, wow. So is that common, though, to change between branches?
No.
All right.
There's some feelings there. I left the Marine Corps at the time just because I thought that it was the right decision. I was a military policeman in the Marine Corps, so it's kind of fun. Not the one that runs around and arrests everyone. The field kind that's out there, like,
yeah.
You know, next to the infantry, helping people on the streets, things like that. That kind of environment. And I made that switch because when I was getting out of the Marine Corps, I thought I was done with the military. And then literally the day that I was getting out, the Army recruiter came around for explosive ordnance disposal. So the Hurt Locker movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those really crazy guys that like run down range and take bombs apart. That recruiter came to my like leaving the Marine Corps thing. And he was like, do you want to join Special Forces? Do you want to be super cool? And I was like, yes. I want to be super cool.
Oh my gosh, it worked on you.
Yeah, yeah. So he got me. He reined me in.
Oh my God. So that was not part of your plans at all?
No. My plan was like I was going to get out and be a disgruntled veteran and go to college, you know. have tons of keg sand party, you know, have a really great time.
You could still do that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm baby face. Thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know if you changed branches because of your transition.
No, but I would say that, you know, I might have been fortunate because I think about this a lot. Like, the Marine Corps is a very, like, by the books, very hardcore, parkour sort of, like, environment. And though I was already in the special ops, like, operating environment, which is very hyper-masculine, like, I think moving to the Army gave me that sort of latitude to, like, expand on that. Because I always think, like, had I stayed in the Marine Corps, had I transitioned, like, my next enlistment, would I have gotten as far as I got? And I also question, too, like, if I was a trans woman, would I have gotten as far as I got? Because let's be real, you know?
Yeah.
So I always think about those considerations, but I don't think I would have. I don't think I would have gotten as far in the Marine Corps as I did with, like, the sort of working on the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and then also, too, like, working on this ban. Like, I don't think that it would have had as much traction.
So, I mean, in the trans people I know who have served, they've all transitioned afterward. I'm thinking about, like, Chelsea Manning and Kristen Beck. Do you think that's because they were trans women?
I honestly have to take that sort of binary gender consideration for real. Yes. As far as Kristen Beck, who was, like, my absolute best friend.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Kristen Beck and our best friends, we worked in Military Freedom Coalition together, and we worked on the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, as well as the repeal on trans military service together. So, like, we're like this.
Oh,
we hang out sometimes and you go shoot guns, cook food, have huge fires. I love her wife. Like, so yeah, Kristen and I are, like, old buddies. We've been buddies for, like, maybe, like, 5 or 6 years.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So, I don't think, like, I think the culture, because of the hyper-masculinity and sort of men not taking, like, hold of that, same thing with rape culture. Like, it would be very difficult to be a trans woman and transition while serving. There have been, trans women that have transitioned during service, like Staff Sergeant King. She's an infantry woman, and she transitioned on service, and she's still in the United States Army. I just think that path ahead is going to be difficult because we're used to the binary in the military, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm the only one of my experience as a female and my experience as a trans person, masculine, like, that has had that sort of, like, acceptance in that culture, you know? Even as a Marine, you know, when I was a woman, quote-unquote woman,
right,
like, I was one of three women in a company that had 300 men. So, like, my integration experience is so different than, you know, let's just say the average person, or they're, like, let's be real, there's no feminine people that went to a special ops program, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because as a trans male, you're fitting in with 300 men.
Correct.
Versus separating yourself as...
Correct.
Oh.
You see what I'm saying? So I'm not saying that necessarily her friends are going to, like, devalue a trans woman or anything like that. I'm saying that, like, there's that adjustment period, and these are hyper-masculine men who are used to, like, we have to protect the female, and then they, you know... So I think they'll evolve for sure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because when you're in the trenches, it's just the guy next to you. You know what I mean? That's all you got, really.
Yeah.
You're not like America and patriotism. You know, you're more like, oh God, I just want to make it through this day. So, like, I think that a trans woman, she's still going to have that camaraderie. But I think that, like, you know, they're going to be a little skittish. You know?
Yeah.
But I think they'll come around for sure. I mean, females in combat was part of my experience as a Marine. So, and I had to get over those stereotypes. And I think that a trans woman of infantry experience is going to be a tough MF-er. You know what I mean? So, like...
Yeah, for now.
Yeah, for now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, I think we had to mention that, like, the armed forces has historically led the way for, like, equality and desegregation.
Yes.
Like, it starts there.
Right. And that's what I really want the American public to, like, sort of acknowledge and, like, be gracious of that. Because, like, whether it was, you know, racial integration, women... you know, that's how, you know, people of color, black people, got their freedom, was by serving in the Civil War, and they were granted, you know, rights originally. Even with the ban on gay marriage, the military said that they were going to give equal sort of incentives and pay to married homosexual spouse, you know, couples before the nation did. So, like, these people got those freedoms and rights, like EO protections for LGBT people passed in 2015. Right? But you still got that before we even have it as a nation.
That's massive.
Yeah. And so, like, and then honestly, like, the United States military is the largest employer of trans people. Trans people on average make less than $10,000. So, like, we're getting there. And I think about these things when I'm, like, trying to move the hand. I really do.
Wait, go back. The army or the military is the largest employer of trans people?
Yes, because you have to think, like, trans people actually serve up to 3 times as much as the general population. Truth. Like, I can't even make these numbers up. So trans men will serve in the United States military 2.5 times than any other demographic of men.
Wow.
And trans feminine people serve 3 times more likely to serve in the military than any other demographic of women. Inclusively. Like, isn't that crazy?
Those are huge numbers.
Correct. So, like, when people are like, oh, why would you fight this ban or stuff like that? I've had some critiques. Like, why would you fight this ban to allow trans people to be in? I was like, because it employs us.
Also, like, why wouldn't I?
Exactly. Like, of course. You can't tell me I can't kick that soccer ball.
Yeah. Was it, like, we have, like, in the coming out process, there's, like, many coming outs. And there's correct. Private and public coming outs.
Yeah.
Was it a big decision for you to come out and be so open publicly and be written about?
So, I had conflicts. I'll be really honest. Like, I'm a human being. I think about these things. I have feelings.
Oh, exclusive.
Yeah.
Shane Ortega has feelings.
Yeah, not just a meathead.
That makes one person at this table.
Yeah. But no, I had really big conflicts because one of the big things I never want to do is, like, make it the me show. You know what I mean? So, but I knew by leading this example that it was going to, I was taking advantage of the privilege I had. I'll just be really straight up. Like, I had hypermasculinity privilege, you know? I was this big buff dude in this, like, really, like, high-speed kinetic unit. So, I took advantage of that privilege. And then also, too, like, I understood the military subculture. Like, if you're excelling, you know, physical fitness-wise, weaponry-wise, knowledge-wise, authority-wise, and you're doing all these amazing things, no one's going to question you. You know what I mean? Because yeah. They're not. What are they going to say? Oh, we don't. Why are you? Hey, you have a mustache now. You know, like, that's not going to happen. So.
Oh, fascinating.
Right.
So that level of performance that high level.
Yes.
That was a conscious decision.
Correct. So previously in the Marine Corps, as a female person, you know, aligned or embodied, I was already like a top fitness, you know, performer. I had, you know, always ran fast, shot well, that kind of stuff. I know that's very stereotypical. Ugh. But yeah, like, I had already been at that level and yeah. I was already able to keep up and compete with the males because I had already been in an all-male unit for a really long time before I came in the Army. So, like, I don't think people know that part too. Like, before I came in the Army, I really never worked with a female person. So all my experiences are, like, super hyper-masculine.
Fascinating.
Right? So knowing this experience and sort of knowing how to, like, walk in this masculinity, I was like, oh, this is easy. Army PT test is easy. I keep up good. So after transition, of course, testosterone gives you physical benefits. So, like, I wasn't just, like, a bottom male performer. I was, like, you know, a top male performer.
Yeah.
In that sort of, like, quotations. So, yeah. So knowing that, I just used it, you know, like, I went as far as I could. And the reason I chose to come out was because the senior military leadership and, like, the politicians were saying, like, well, we don't want to allow anyone to transition because it'll deteriorate from the military, right? And I was like, or, like, can trans people perform at the same level? And I was like, oh, too easy.
Yeah.
So, like, I purposely entered a bodybuilding competition. Placed, you know what I mean? And qualified, you know, like, purposely, like, ran these amazing PT tests of perfect scores or beyond on purpose, like, shot perfectly, tried out for special forces, you know, passed assessments, did things like that on purpose.
So you, to get rid of their argument that there's, like, a difference between, like, biological sexes.
Right,
like, oh,
correct.
That's huge.
Yeah.
So while you didn't want to make it the me show, you said, you kind of had to because you have these benefits that we need to flaunt.
Correct. And everybody always knows, no matter where you are in our, like, community spectrum of letters, like, the first of anything.
Sorry, that's like the best phrase I've ever heard. Our spectrum of letters.
Exactly. Add some more.
What is Z?
What are Z people? But
that's
no.
Next week.
Yeah, exactly. I want to be back for that. So wherever you are in that community spectrum of letters, like, you know, there's certain truths that I have. Every day that I wake up in America, I'm a brown person. That's a certain perspective. Every day that I wake up in the military, I'm a trans person. So the first of anything. And then also, too, like, people don't think about that. Like, this is a brown, trans person, masculine that did this. You know what I mean? So that's always like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I think about, like, all of those things. I'm surprised my brain hasn't exploded yet. But, like, I think about all those things. Like, how far is this going to do this if I do this? You know, like, how far would I push myself to, like, do this special operations training that, like, I know, first off, you know, like, the average person can't do. But, you know, what if I do this against, you know, the 0.03% of the odds? Like,
yeah.
And so I did on purpose. And it was just so important. I started support groups called, like, first it was OutServe Trans was the first, like, support group for trans military people. It was part of OutServe with Josh Seafried, Katie Miller, the first, like, military people, like, the officers that came out
yeah.
during the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So that was back in 2011. And then I started another support group that's really big now called Sparta. And that's the biggest, like, LGBT military support group of, like, all in our nation. So, like, it was just really important to not only, like, move the ball down the field, but also to like set a path. So like there are healthcare practices that are in play now, or like there's certain qualifications, like what is an authentic gender? And I said, like, use the passport standard, and that's going to be the standard. You know what I mean? So like, huge. Yeah.
When you're talking about Sparta and stuff, is that for currently serving members?
Yes. So they do have a reserve and National Guard chapter, but it's not the same chapter as it is for people who are actively serving.
So I think that's huge to hear about, that there's a like queer and trans culture within the military.
Yes. And it's its own thing. it's got some funny points.
What does that mean?
Like
things
you
can't repeat.
not things I can't repeat, but let's just say, like, you know, one of the first female submariners, it was a trans man.
Okay.
You know, that's kind of like interesting in that sort of, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? To break that, like, not only female barrier, but also a masculine, like, trans person became the one of the first, you know, submariners in the Navy ever. And that was, like, 2 years ago.
What is a submariner?
A submariner, so nuclear submarines, those big, giant boats that go underwater.
With nukes?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, like, 2 years ago, there were no females in any naval unit, quote-unquote females, that served in that. And one of the very first female, quote-unquote, submariners was a trans masculine person.
Oh, huge.
Correct.
Wow.
So Blake Dierman, and he also now sits in the Pentagon, and he helps advise on trans military policy. He's also in that organization that I told you about, Sparta. So that's what I mean by, like, sneaky a little bit. A sneaky little fox.
That's yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. No, I've never heard of them.
Yeah. So you can Google them. They're more of a support organization. They're not more of like an advocacy, but yeah, like that holds a lot of the membership.
Wow. AfterBuzz. Oh, excuse me.
You sneezed.
Yes. Yeah. Tell me, speaking of like military culture.
Yes.
I think of community and role models as being so vital to the trans and queer experience.
Yes.
So did you have that within the military?
So when you were talking previously about like kind of like why I did this and stuff, like my mother served underneath Don't Ask, Don't Tell for 27 years. She's a lesbian, and I got to see like as a child, like, you know, 5, 6, how that experience really rocked her. And then also too, like, I'm so, so blessed and like so fortunate to have like been in the queer community like from a young age. So but I saw how that experience really, you know, affected her, and so I tried to build those same bonds when I came into service. So yes, having the support of a community is great. Like, I had the support of the quote-unquote LGB community, but there was no T in that community because no one would dream of talking about it. It was like the beyond the hush of hushes, you know what I mean? Like,
when you were growing up?
No, when I was in the military about trans people, it just didn't exist. Like, wow. I heard of people like Monica Helms, who was a trans woman who got out of the military. She's the one that created the trans flag. So there you go. Oh, so yeah. Monica Helms. So like, I heard about her because I decided to Google, and then I found out, oh, she was in the military, and you know, and then I connected with her on Facebook because I'm a Facebook stalker. But I didn't know that there was an actual culture of trans people, mostly trans feminine people, who have served in the military. And so that's how like it sparked my interest, and I created that space. And then I learned about more trans people. So like the first year that I created that space, I only had like 100 people, but the next year it doubled, and then it went to the thousands.
Wow. So yeah. You grew up around the queer community.
Yeah, which I know it's kind of weird, right? I have this crazy weird narrative. Yeah, so I grew up in the queer community. My mom was like, you know, an out and proud lesbian.
She served the queer and military community.
Yes.
Oh, what an interesting dynamic.
Right? So, and you know, some of her partners, you know, like were also military people, you know, so I got to really see, like sort of all facets of that, like social stratification. It was crazy, but I'm really, really thankful that I got like that full perspective, you know? Yeah. And it wasn't just feminine, like queer people in the military. It was also like masculine people. Like one of the guys that my mom always hung out with, was her best friend in the military, was a gay man, and his name is Eric. And like, you know, I used to go to like the Busch Gardens and like in Virginia and stuff like that with him, or like build tree houses or whatever.
Oh,
but
God.
Like, yeah, but I got to experience like all of it, and it was amazing.
So was it a big decision for you not to transition, but to transition while staying in the military? And not leaving?
Yes. Okay, so I'll just be real. Every military person thinks at the end of a contract, they're like, I can get the heck out of here. Right?
Yeah.
You know, like I can pop smoke. And for me, serving wasn't just about, you know, yes, it's great to get a, you know, a paycheck on the 1st and the 15th, but it was so much more than that. Like, it was an act of defiance, because I just knew, like, from having this really rich queer experience and, like, how powerful our community can be, I knew that, like, if I had continued this, like, pushing it, like, I could push this. I know it's, like, sort of, like, narcissistic, it's sort of self-involved maybe, but like I just knew that, like, I just could felt, I felt it, like I knew I could just push this. Like, EO protections was so hard, but like I got EO protections in 2015, you know what I mean, from lobbying. Or like,
what are EO protections?
So equal opportunity protections for LGB people. Even though that the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell was lifted in 2011, it was nothing would change in military law about discriminating against people's career that were LGB.
Really?
Yeah, until 2015.
Okay, that's fascinating. I have to push back on you. I don't think that that is you being narcissistic at all.
Yeah.
The thinking that you could change this thing that needed to be changed.
Yeah. Well, you know, shifting a paradigm is a bit obsessive, though. Let's just keep real. Super obsessive. Like, so I was just like, I have to do this. This is, like, these are the ways it's going to work.
So yeah. You had that in the back of your mind from day one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I got to experience, it can't be described as anything else except the suffering that my mom had from, like, not being able to fully be herself. Just think, like, military balls. Okay, that's the most flamboyant, festive thing that we do in the military. But how much better would that have been if she could have, like, taken her partner and, like, really enjoyed the ball and gotten drunk with everyone and, like, cracked the kind of jokes she wanted to crack, or not be judged for those, like, sort of, like, you know, those small, slim, like, beautiful moments that you get in the military? That would have been so much better. Or, like, there's nothing like being able to take your partner or spouse to a promotion ceremony. You know what I mean? What if you can't do that? What if they don't get to see, like, the day that you worked for the last 13 years? You know, like, you know, yeah, what I mean? So that's really powerful. And I got to see that exchange from my mom. So,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. When you were working on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, getting that repealed, it's fairly exclusive. It does not include trans people. Was that an argument?
It wasn't an argument against me, because, like, I think people don't know that, too. Like, I like to say that I identify as pansexual. Like, I authenticate or I acknowledge whatever the person's gender is, and yeah, I fall in love with the person, right? So, like, it wasn't a conflict of interest, per se, but it definitely, it kind of had, like, a bitter taste on the backside, you know? Because as soon as Don't Ask, Don't Tell was lifted, all the big organizations, and I'm not trying to talk, kind of went to sleep. They went night-night. They kind of coasted, and they had, like, big galas and things like that, and they celebrated it, but they didn't think about continuing. And so that's why I had to form Sparta. It was because, you know, there was no one really continuing, you know?
Yeah.
And even for the veterans, too. Like, I think about that, too. Like, regardless of how we feel about war, like, what they want, and they're sort of that, they're human beings, and they need to be acknowledged as well. So that's why I continued.
I think that's huge.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Looking, when you're in military culture, I think of movies, and I think of, like, perfectly made beds and sergeants yelling at people, yes, in lines. Yeah. How realistic is that?
It's extremely realistic, really? But probably more, it's more intense, because it's terrifying, because it's reality. Like, so for just, like, the barracks thing, right?
Yeah.
So just imagine living in the barracks with three other stinky people, right? In a bunk beds. And a space that's probably, like, you know, 90 square feet, sharing a bathroom. And then you have this, you know, angry team leader, supervisor that you work with, but also comes to your room once a week to, like, make sure you folded your underwear perfectly square. Like, there's no way. And I lived in the barracks until about 2006.
Yeah.
So, like, for 5 years, that was my life. And I was like, I'm a grown up. I pay my own bills, you know? Yeah, so.
So even experiencing that frustration, how could you stay in it so much longer? It just accepted.
Yeah, I mean, with anything, how do I say that? Positive mental attitude, fake it till you make it sort of thing. Like, yeah, with any, I'm just really good at doing that. I'm good at lying to myself, like, yeah, we're running through the desert, literally. But we're going to stop running eventually, you know, like, you know.
You do have a very positive outlook.
Yeah, so I try to just manipulate that situation. Like, even doing things like, so back in 2013, I went to Special Operations Selection Course in North Carolina for, you know,
the Green Beret.
Anyway, that's serious with the Green Berets, all right? So it's like the top of the top, the tier, right? So I went to this course, and it's absolutely miserable. It's like 400 miles, 21 days, in boots. So, like, and during the whole time in course, you see, like, your buddies drop out and your friends drop out, and you're just, it, like, just grabs your heart, and you're like, oh, he was such a strong guy, you know, yeah, like, oh, and if he can't do it, I can't do it. But then you're like, ah, I'm just going to keep going until, like, I break, That's, you just pretty much make your peace with that. So that's kind of like how I attack this stuff. It's just like, either I'll die or I'll die trying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Oh, wait, I love that. So why did you finally leave the military?
So the last 2.5 years, so in August of 2015 is when I had the controversy, as I like to call it, the controversy, the incident where I took a flight physical and they came back and they're, I guess it just kind of like karma just finally caught up to me and they're like, you're a female person and you're taking testosterone and we're going to ground, you can't fly because you're a female person, and you're taking testosterone. So when that happened, it wasn't just like a health issue. It was also like a military legal issue. Right. So like, in all seriousness, like I could have gotten put out of the military with a bad conduct discharge and dishonorable service. So a lot of the time I try to pause and like be really, really thankful for that, because thank God I did do something, or like I couldn't work at McDonald's. Like, so it became a legal issue. And so I was under legal review for the last 2 years because of like fighting this repeal. So I literally had to like write to the office of the Surgeon General of the United States Army with Joshua Block from the ACLU to challenge it. And then I also had to write a challenge to like the medical documentation. So like literally in like a week and a half, Josh and I turned out this like 400-page obsessive thing that went through every line of like the medical journal and like every line of the legal journal, like the legal jargon books. And like, it was like, you can't have this anymore, to challenge it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that was a 2-year process?
No. 2.5 weeks, we churned that out. But the whole legal situation took 2.5 years.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, us challenging each and every individual branch of service, going to each and every, like, the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps. I went to each and every different branch's Surgeon General and challenged it, which is also, if you, like, track the history of the repeal, how each branch came out with, like, a memorandum where, like, at first they were like, we're not going to process anybody out. It has to go to the DOD or, like, the government level up in Washington. And then each of the branches started dropping those. So it wasn't just me, like I said, like just saying, oh, let's work out for my career in the Army. I actually like did it incrementally to each of the other branches as well. And it was super stressful.
Oh my God, of course. That's huge though.
Yeah. So it was a lot, but we approached it that way and thank God it was successful. So like the implementation period, things like surgery benefits and things like that too were other challenges that we had during that 2.5 year period. So I wasn't actually flying and I wasn't doing my job. I was just kind of riding a desk.
Oh no.
Yeah. And I had tried to move forward by like applying for different schools. I had filled out a packet for what we know now as Delta, or how do I say this? The civilians call it Delta. Kristen Beck used to be in this particular unit that we don't talk about.
Yeah.
And you have to have a recommendation in order to apply. And she recommended me and I got to apply and get screened. And so like I gave up that opportunity, which is like where I was supposed to be this Christmas, to do this repeal, because, you know, people know your face, they know your name. You can't be swoopy. You know?
Yeah.
So that's what I chose.
And when did you leave finally?
So I actually officially got retired in July. This past July. So July 2016, the 20th was my last day of service. And then I actually started going on terminal vacation leave back in May.
Okay. And did you want to leave?
I'm still kind of figuring out like how I feel about it, but I didn't necessarily want to leave. Like my dream was really to like push the ball down the field as far as I could go. And I really, really wanted to go actually try out for Delta and see like if I was going to make it and like be swoopy. But also too, like that comes with like, you know, the other side, like it compromises your personal life and things like that. So in some ways I'm grateful. And then in other ways I'm like still conflicted because, you know, it was a dream. Everybody kind of like that balloon of a dream. You're like, I have so many other balloons, but I really wanted that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Like, I'm pretty sure there's always a positive trade-off, you know?
Of course. So,
yeah.
You've done so many tours too overseas. Like, have you had any experience with PTSD? Is that affecting you?
So I'll just be really upfront, really candid. Like, I'm 100% disabled. I know I got like all my things.
Really?
Yeah. So technically, yeah, I'm 100%, according to the VA, I'm 100% disabled veteran. So I have to think about those considerations too. Like, I have a neurological condition, you know, it makes me have severe migraines. It also affects like dexterity and coordination a little bit. So like, and those are things that I was dealing with, like, while I was still serving. Or, like, you know, I have arthritis now. You know, stuff like that. You're like, oh, every year.
I've never heard that phrasing, 100% disabled.
Yeah.
What is that, like?
So, the VA has, like, sort of a scale of how they judge whatever's your impairment. And so, like, for my impairments, the total of their whole equals up to, like, 100% on their level of, like, disability. So even if I had said, like, I wanted to stay in the Army, technically speaking, like, I should have probably retired, you know, before then. You know, too many accidents, too many things. Getting a little blown up here and there. Yeah. You know?
it's so interesting hearing you say that, just because, like, looking at you, you've maintained, like, a level of fitness.
Yeah. Oh, I'm getting skinny these days.
You're in LA too long, that's why.
Yeah,
yeah. You just never know, like, what's going on, like, with somebody.
Yeah. So, I mean, I hold my ish together, I guess you could say. Like, I hold it pretty well. But, you know, like, I always have a headache or, like, you know, I'm always kind of like, oh, my body hurts. You know, it's my new normal. And so I think about that exchange. Like, what did I do that I could have, like, enabled other people to have sort of, like, a plate at this table? And then also, too, like, you know, I'm okay with that exchange, you know? I don't run anymore. That's, like, one thing I don't do anymore. Like, I don't have to run anymore.
Yeah.
That's great. I hate running. Like, you know? You know? So, like, I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned your tattoos.
Yes.
What's your, like, two most significant ones?
So, the best tattoos, I guess you could say, that you can see.
Sure.
Is probably, like, this one right here is, it's the Om symbol. So the reason that I got this, like, sort of Sanskrit Om symbol is because, like, when you're in a meditative state, like, the highest level that you can obtain is, God, it's spaced. I'm so sorry. But, like, anyway, so the highest level of actualization that you can obtain is basically the representation of this symbol. So I put it on my arm. So it's a reminder to, like, always try to achieve, always try to, like, be self-actualized and be the best sign of compassion. And then this is going to be kind of sad. It gives you the feels. But the other tattoo that I like that you can see is this rabbit. It's from Donnie Darko. It's my friend Leroy Sandoval. He passed away during my first deployment back in 2006. And that was his favorite movie. And when you're downrange, you can only watch DVDs. So we used to watch that movie, like, all the time. So that's why I got this, like, Donnie Darko tattoo.
Oh.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Last one about your tattoos. Yeah. You do what on your chest?
Chakra. Poet. Oh, it says poet.
Oh, it says poet?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I thought it said duet. I only saw it in a picture on social media. Okay.
Are you watching my beach photo? No, just kidding.
I was doing research. poet.
Yes.
So that begs the question.
Oh, yes. Yes, to answer the question, yes. I write poetry, but I like to think of myself more of a philosopher these days.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of social media,
yes.
I saw that you are a painter.
Is that true? Yes, I paint.
Really? What do you paint?
Crazy, terrifying, abstract. No, I paint sort of like, I guess you could say, like, Degas mixed with, like, I don't even know. I just paint these, like, sort of, like, very colorful, sort of abstract, dreamy kind of paintings.
I love that.
Yeah, but I would say they're pretty emotional. If anybody wants to check one out, you can go to my Instagram, look up Mini Hulkin, H-U-L-K-I-N. I'm going to sell them, you know, because the moment has passed with, you know, dark paintings.
Yeah. I love that. Everything that we've talked about is not to negate. It's in the past.
No worries. Yeah.
It's, you know, like, what are you doing right now?
So what I'm doing right now, I haven't been able to do this. So, like, getting my education is super important. So I'm pursuing my degree in philosophy, and then I'm going to move on to, like, the JD PhD program. What?
Wow.
But also, too, I'm doing a lot of public speaking and educational speaking. So, like, I just came from Rush Medical Center in Chicago. It's the second year that I've done a cultural competency and sort of educational speaking for LGBT-focused healthcare. Last year, I helped them write a textbook. This year, I'm going to help them review the textbook. So, like, that sort of thing. And then, speaking at schools, like, next week I'm going to Boston and I'm going to talk about body positivity and be like, oh, here's a picture of me naked. Let's talk about affirming your gender, you know, like, yeah. So, I'm definitely working in that.
Cool.
Yeah. And, so two nonprofits, 41%, and then obviously Sparta. And then I'm just trying to figure out, how do I rule the world like Oprah?
I think you're on your way.
Yeah.
That's
so,
quite a lot.
Oh, also too, like, I'm working on writing a book, and yeah, I'm trying to figure out where everything's going, though. Driving the car. Yeah.
Oh, is that new? Really?
No.
Are you learning?
No, you are
driving the metaphorical car.
Yeah, driving.
I was like, how could you be in the Army and not know how to drive a car?
Yeah, right?
Well, this was so much fun. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't rant too much.
Oh, my God. Yeah. This was amazing. Don't apologize.
No.
If you want to learn more about you, where should they check out, like, your website or just social media?
So I have really cool social media. You can go to Shane Speaking. Really simple.com.
Cool.
Also, too, I'm with Chartwell Speakers Bureau. So if anyone ever wants to get in contact with me professionally, they can just email mckenzie@chartwellspeaking.com.
Awesome.
And that grabs right away. But I'm on Twitter, only Shane Ortega, and then Manny Holkin on Instagram.
Cool.
If you want to get thirsty and stalk me.
Yeah, thank you. And if you're listening to us, you can also watch us on YouTube.
Yes.
If you're watching us, go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, comment, and tell all of your friends. Okay, we'll be back
Absolutely.
Next week. Yeah, bye.
Thanks. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.